Had enough of the excuse-making, lack of accountability, and psychobabble? Then you're in the right place. You're listening to the Voice of Reason, and we're here to help you reconnect with your inner common sense. Now, here's the host of the Voice of Reason, Deneen Manette.
Hello, and welcome, everybody, to this week's edition of The Voice of Reason. I'm Deneen Manette, a criminal investigator, infidelity expert, mom, and someone who just loves to say what's on my mind all the time. I always say, if you don't have an opinion about something, ask me. I will be happy to give you mine. So we're going to just jump into the topics I'd like to discuss today, because I have a pretty packed show and I've got a whole lot of different things that I want to talk about. The last segment of the show, I always reserve for infidelity questions. Whatever the infidelity question of the week is, someone will write me in with something. And since I have such a vast, deep background in infidelity and relationship repair, I like to take some time and answer that question. But I have a couple today and I want to get to both of them. So I want to go ahead and get started with our show this week. And I wanted to start off talking about the little boy from Baltimore. I don't know if you are familiar with that, but there's a story which happened last week in which a 13-year-old boy in Baltimore who tugged a girl towards him and kissed her has been charged with assault. And this is according to the Baltimore County Police. Both kids are minors, so no other names or additional information has been provided about them. But apparently, the situation involved a 14-year-old girl who goes to Pikesville Middle School in Baltimore. She told the police that a 13-year-old classmate, a boy, pulled her toward him by her shirt and open-mouthed kissed her with his tongue. This happened on Wednesday morning of last week, according to the Baltimore police. Now, it doesn't say whether or not she knew the boy, but apparently this girl is really pretty, and this was some kind of a dare, apparently. The boy said someone dared him to kiss her, a bunch of his friends. You know how stupid middle school boys are. And the boy ended up, you know, he attacked her. He did it. And he ended up being charged as a juvenile with second-degree assault. And he was released to his mother, so he didn't end up actually having to be in juvenile hall or in custody, but he was taken in and he was charged. He was charged with second degree assault, which is, you know, not anything small. That's a pretty big deal. And the police say he wasn't taken to the precinct and processed, like he wasn't booked in to custody, but he was, you know, he was charged. And he does, and people are kind of all over the place with this. I've seen so many different comments. I've seen so many different opinions as to whether or not people feel that this was an appropriate reaction to what happened. Whether or not people feel as though this is going overboard, whether this is too much, or whether it wasn't enough, or whether this was actually what should have happened. So I've been reading a lot of the comments. I've been listening to a lot of the things people are saying on talk radio and all different forums in which people are discussing their opinions on this. And people are all over the place. Some feel, like I said, that the punishment was just too strict. They want to know why the police are involved, why this kid is now facing a potential criminal record. And, you know, maybe boys will be boys, saying that, hey, this is what boys do. This is what middle school boys do. They're inappropriate. They're immature. And this is what they do. So maybe this is over the top. Some people feel as though maybe her brother or her father or someone in the school administration should have handled this. Maybe, you know, her father should have gone and jammed the kid up. Or maybe this was something that the parents could have handled between themselves. And as opposed to the police being called, or whether that since this happened on school grounds, this was something that the school administration should have taken care of, because isn't it their domain to handle things the way they deem fit to handle them? And, you know, maybe that should have been the response. Or like I said, a parent should have called another parent, even though in today's society, people tend to be so protective of their children. And a lot of parents are not in a position to hear what another parent is saying, whether they're even open to having you come to their house or phone them and tell them that your child did something. A lot of parents become very protective and very hostile when it comes to situations like that. So a lot of people want to know why the parents didn't get involved and why it needed to go to the police. But some responses that I heard were really just kind of, you know, they were just all over the place. And some of them, which obviously came from strong conservatives, right wingers, you know, were evident in their responses. One person wrote in and said, once again, Radical feminists, anti-male political ideology triumphs over common sense. These are kids, and this can easily have been handled without the criminal justice system being involved. This is the work of stupid adults. What the boy did and the boys who put him up to it was wrong, but this could have been handled by any adult who has half a brain and a little bit of common sense. So that's somebody that's coming down on the side of, you know, why did they even get involved? Someone else, I heard a statement, enough of the hysteria. This was a kiss in bold letters. Nothing more, nothing less, a kiss. It's not like he threw her to the floor and started humping her right there. It's just a kiss. This is a typical liberal knee-jerk reaction. So basically, the blame is being placed on the liberals that are so quick to call the police, I guess, instead of taking out their guns and shooting. I don't know. But in any event, this person is really upset about the fact that what they see as a typical knee-jerk reaction, and apparently, unless you throw somebody to the floor and start humping them, apparently nothing needs to be done. I don't know. I guess that's where they're going with this. I can't really tell. Another person wrote in and said, I'm surprised they didn't put him on the sexual predator list. Instead, maybe he would get put in the slammer with the kid who chewed his Pop-Tart to look like a gun. No, you all remember that case, the kid who got expelled for chewing a Pop-Tart to look like a gun. Now, that was absolutely ridiculous. But yeah, I guess he's just making reference to that and how silly it is and how severe the punishment is for something that is just not that serious. And then finally, one other comment that I wanted to point out. Someone wrote, a generation ago, the kid's parents would be called into the principal's office and they'd tell him to keep his hands to himself. Now, however, this will be a nationwide outrage fueled by an overwhelming pain. So once again, you know, the liberals are being blamed for this. The liberals are being blamed for, you know, the PC liberal agenda, politically correct. I've done a whole show on PC. And of course, being PC is being caring and considerate of others and their opinions and perspectives and whatnot. So I guess you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to stand up, man up, and not, you know, fuel the fire, not be overly sensitive. Makes me wonder, though, you know, whether people would feel this way if it was their daughter who had some boy's unwanted tongue thrust into her mouth, or their wife, if it would still be considered to be outrage fueled by overly sensitive PC agenda. It's really easy to make a statement when you're looking at someone else's child or someone else's situation, and when you're sitting in the peanut gallery or on the sidelines, it's so easy to make that assessment or analysis of something that's not personally reflective of something that happened to you or something that happened in your situation. Or what if it was your son? What if your son had some older boy knock him to the ground or run up and grab him and thrust his tongue in your son's mouth? It makes me wonder whether people would have a different reaction, whether it's just a situation from our misogynistic society where men are in control and they should be able to do what they want to do. I just wonder whether or not people's perspectives would change if, number one, this was personal to them, and number two, if we were talking about a little boy that this happened to by another little boy instead of it happening to a little girl. And I also kind of wonder whether or not things would change if somewhere down the line we discover that maybe this was a black boy that did this to a white girl. Would that change? Would that make a difference? Would that, you know, maybe that is what happened, and maybe that's why the police were involved. We don't know that aspect of the story. We don't know. But a lot of people who come from these, you know, Tea Party-ish conservative right-wing opinions would feel differently if the circumstances or the situations were different, and if the parties that were involved in this incident were in a group that they feel gets too many passes or gets coddled too much or feels too entitled. If maybe the gay kid shoved the tongue in the kid's mouth or the black kid did it to the white girl or the white boy or whatever, if that would change things. Honestly, I think that it probably would, quite frankly, just because of the things, the rhetoric that I hear that comes out of a lot of these debates and opinions. It just seems that these things tend to be specific to who's doing it to who the victim is and who the assailant is, as opposed to just, you know, a objective look at the scenario and the fact pattern of the situation. So those are the things that just make me wonder. I wonder, you know, if it would be different. But there were opposing viewpoints as well. And they were also all over the place, but there were more people that were in favor of calling the police. One person says, some people don't seem to understand. It's not like he ran up to her and gave her a quick peck on the lips and ran away. He forcefully grabbed her by the shirt and stuck his tongue in her mouth. I mean, that's sexual assault. And perhaps serving time in detention would not be the best solution to the problem, but he should at least be suspended and have to take a class on sexual harassment. And this person continues to write, just letting him go without a consequence can only damage him, and it damages her as well. But he will think twice about his actions and whether or not they were okay if he doesn't get in trouble. And he could also lead to bigger incidents down the road, which is true. I mean, this could be something that is the beginning of a person who doesn't recognize others' boundaries and is not interested in others' boundaries and in holding to them and in recognizing this is not okay to do. A similar or worse action show up later, and people are going to say, why didn't someone do something when he was a teenager? This person had no problem with the cops being involved, as long as the punishment was not unusual or over the top, but felt as though the justice system definitely needed to have something, you know, on this kid. And, you know, you think about it, it's like, yeah, people do look back and say, hey, this has been a pattern. This started long ago and no one did anything. Everyone stood around. No one did anything. So here's somebody who's advocating for the fact that, hey, maybe if we step up and do something a little sooner, then maybe these problems would not evolve into something worse later on. Another person commented, they said this boy apparently was dared to do so by the other boys to do this. And if they give him a slap on the wrist, they're sending a clear message to those other boys and to every male in that school that the bodies of the females in that school are not off limits, but rather are a free-for-all. It would send a message to every female in that school as well that if you don't want to be touched without your consent, then you're on your own. By basically giving the boy a slap on the wrist, not dealing with it. It's telling all the girls that if they want to be touched without their consent, hey, you're on your own. This person felt as though it was a criminal act and the school did exactly the right thing, as did the prosecutor. So, you know, there are a lot of people that feel, hey, you know what? They did the right thing. Not only does it need to send a message to the boy, it needs to send a message to the girl and the other girls in school and the other potential victims in school that aren't necessarily girls. I mean, girls attack boys as well. And that isn't that equally as offensive? Isn't that equally as you should be viewed as an assault? I think so. But then, of course, there was a third group that felt that the victim needed to have done more. One of the people that I read a comment from wrote that the only thing that stops bullies and violent fools, like the kind who hold girls down so he can shove his tongue in her mouth against her will, is the type that only a broken nose would fix. For those of you who say, but then my kid will get suspended if he does something to fight back, you need to question your values. How is it better to teach your children to be a willing victim when attacked, or to stand by as another is being assaulted and do nothing? Ah, I think we're on to something with that. But before I address that further, I want to let you know that there's a fourth group out there who felt as though, of course, the boy was the victim, quite honestly, and that they, you know, he somehow or another, they were going to find a way to victimize the assailant. And I saw a couple of comments that were to the effect of, the not very wise student who accepted the dare is in trouble. But what about the students who dared him to do it? Are they not in trouble? Why are they not being punished as a conspirator? With friends like that, you don't need enemies. If someone dared him to jump off a cliff, would he do it? Okay, so here we go. That group just does what so many people do, which is take the responsibility away from our kids to think for themselves or to make their own decisions. And that's the group of people that actually honestly make me sick, because they always find a way to scapegoat the behavior of their children by putting it off on someone else. It's the teacher's fault. It's the principal's fault. It's the police officer's fault. It's everybody else's fault, rather than the fact that you made a bad choice. So I'm going to just completely dismiss their opinion, because I think it's stupid. And it's pretty much the problem with our society today, is that nobody wants to be accountable and nobody wants to force their children to be accountable. So we're going to blame. Let's just bring all the kids in. You know, my kid played on a baseball team once. He was a pitcher. And he was so easily rattled by everything. He was very, I know as a pitcher, you're supposed to tune everything out and only see what's in front of you. You're supposed to tune out all the noise and all of the heckling and everything. But my son was not able to do that. He heard everything. And so one of the other teams had this kid that didn't even play, but at the edge of the bench, and that kid would heckle the pitcher. That was his job, was to heckle the pitcher. And it made my son so mad one day. He was pitching a great game. It made him so mad that he left the mound and charged over there to attack the kid, try to get into the dugout. He didn't make it, but he did get thrown out of the game. And his team ended up losing. And it was because he allowed himself to be rattled. So what do you think I did as a parent? Yell at the other coach? Yell at the other kid? No! I told my kid, you're an idiot! You're an idiot! Why would you allow somebody to talk you into something and to get you out of your game? That is your problem. And that's the situation that happens a lot. People don't recognize that, geez, you know, maybe my kid needs to be stronger. Maybe my kid ought not listen to other people and make their own decision. Since when did we take the responsibility away from our kids to think for themselves? There is so much blame that goes on, especially in this situation. We blame the victim for not fighting back. We blame the teachers for not handling it better. We blame the police for not arresting him, you know, if he didn't get arrested. The DA for charging him. We blame the police for arresting him. We blame the DA for charging the kid. And now there's a group out there that even blames his buddies for leading him astray. You know, I call that the Eve philosophy. Eve got that apple, and she coaxed Adam into eating it. It had nothing to do with Adam. Adam wasn't going to do it on his own. It's the Eve philosophy. If it wasn't for Eve, we wouldn't be in all this trouble now, you know? What about everyone being accountable for their own behavior? What about everyone deciding, you know what? I think I am going to make my own decisions and do my own thing. In any event, we'll get back to this in a few minutes.
Welcome back to the Voice of Reason. Here's Deneen Manette.
Welcome back. It's Deneen Manette, and we are still talking about this boy from Baltimore who was arrested and charged for kissing a girl in middle school. And I understand, you know, I really do see all angles of this debate as being somewhat valid to the person who is presenting them. Yes, sexual battery. Yes, sexual assault. I'm okay with both of those. This was not simply a peck. This was a clothing being grabbed, an open mouth kiss by a kid who I think is probably an obvious pervert. I mean, I see this. This is not spontaneous or innocent. To me, this is calculated. And in my opinion, it's way over the top. This kid needs to know that this behavior is not merely wrong, but it's criminal. Now, I understand. I understand not wanting a kid in jail. I understand you don't want your kid to have a record, even if the record is going to be expunged and it could affect his, you know, future job, his military service, going to college. Because, you know, I used to work at juvenile hall, and I remember seeing military recruiters walking around in the halls sometimes, going up and to the court military recruiters here almost every day. I found out that they're there to have a look at sealed juvenile records, which means they had access to juvenile records. So even if your record is sealed as a juvenile, certain institutions, certain government agencies and entities have access to it. So I understand not wanting to have that happen, not wanting to have that carry with a child for, you know, through their adulthood. And I understand that you shouldn't have to pay for something stupid that you do as a child for your entire life, but you need to learn a lesson. And I truly am okay with the police being involved, even if it's just for the scared straight tactic, even if it's just for the police having been called in order to hem this boy up. So cops being involved, yeah, I think that's okay. Jail or charges, I don't know about that. I think there are other options that could have been made available. Informal probation is an option. That's a situation where they leave something open and they charge it if a kid doesn't clean up their act, but it's not something that's handled formally and it doesn't go on your record. It's kind of informally done. But most importantly, what I think needs to happen in this situation, and I know a lot of people don't agree with me, but I think that the most important thing that needs to happen or that needed to happen and doesn't appear to have happened in this situation is that I'm needing this girl to fight back. I am needing this girl to knock the holy hell out of this boy. I need her to kick him in the nuts. I need her to do something other than be a victim. I think that instant justice is key because justice delayed is justice denied. I think if she had hauled off and smacked that boy across the face, punched him in the mouth, kicked him in the balls, done something, it would have sent a clear message to him and to the other boys and to herself. Because we can't allow our daughters to be defenseless victims. Someone said that, you know, we can't do that. We can't have them punching boys back because it teaches them to meet violence with violence. Because this was something that was a violent act done on her, and we cannot have our girls or our society learning that you can't teach violence with violence. I say no. I say absolutely not. They are not meeting violence with violence. They are meeting violence with self-defense and self-preservation. That is not the same thing. Self-defense and violence are not the same thing. One is an aggressive act. One is a responsive act. They are two different things. So I have no problem with her having punched him in the face. Our girls need to stop waiting for someone else to ride in and save us. We got to stop that. We've got to stop hoping that other adults, that other family members, that other parents teach their sons to behave themselves and to mind their manners. I cannot send my daughter out into life hoping that other parents did a good job with their kids. I can't do that. And that hoping other parents taught their kids, their sons, their boys to keep their hands to themselves. We need to take proactive measures. We need to figure out how to get our girls empowered and to have the understanding that they need to take care of themselves. And they need to figure out how to protect their own bodies. And they need to understand that certain situations that they put themselves in may not be in their best interest. I understand that boys need to be taught not to rape. I get that. I have sons. But just as though you are smart enough to know that you cannot leave your car keys running in your Mercedes and run in the grocery store in the hood for an hour and come back and expect it to be still sitting there, that's the same philosophy to me. Yeah, that's stupid. Being stupid is not being criminal, because if stupid was equal to criminal, then we'd all be in jail. But it serves you best when you take precaution to give our girls this message that it is not up to them to take responsibility in their own safety and security. We cannot take the power away from them. We cannot... We have this whole feminist movement that says, no, I can do what I want and wear what I want and be what I want, and you need to keep your hands off of me. I get that. I'm okay with that. But at the same time, you gotta inject some intelligence into that argument. And how can you be having this feminist argument and then turn around and take the power away from our girls by hoping somebody else taught their boys to do right? I'm not okay with that argument. I'm not okay with that philosophy or that way of thinking. I think a punch would have resulted in this boy being embarrassed, and it may have resulted in this boy hitting her back. True. But either result precedes calling the authorities. So whether he was embarrassed or whether he hit her back, either way, I'm okay with the police having been called. I truly am. But the charges would have been different. The charges in the first situation would have been different in that he would have probably not faced charges and could have had some informal probation. That's how I advocate for the embarrassed response to her hitting him back. But he needed to be charged with a felony if he hit her back in this under the second scenario. Either way, I think she should have punched him in the face. But at the end of the day, she would have made a statement. She would have set her boundaries. She would have felt empowered, and she would have put every other boy on notice not to F with her, not to screw with her, not to take the power away from her. We have got to stop babying these girls. It is pathetic, and to have an incompetent girl, because a pathetic, incompetent girl grows into a pathetic, incompetent woman. You get that? A pathetic, incompetent girl grows into a pathetic, incompetent woman. And we have the blame thing that just continues to go on. We feel as though, you know, we've always got to protect our kids from the consequences of their actions, which is what many people are trying to do with this boy, instead of choosing to make an example out of them. Another situation that I wanted to touch on today was something that happened in Middleton, Ohio in August. There were a couple of parents there whose daughter died suddenly, their 18-year-old daughter died suddenly after a heroin overdose. And they made the decision that they were not going to concern themselves with the finger pointing, with the whispers, with the gossiping, with the family stigma. They were going to have the funeral director put in their daughter's obituary flatly stating that she died of a heroin overdose. And they aren't the first grieving family in America to do this. They're not the first ones to cite this. And apparently in this particular community that they were from, this is something that's been happening quite a bit. This has been a record year for heroin related deaths. So this was something that they felt they needed to do. According to the girl's mother, she says there was no hesitation. We've seen other deaths when it's heroin and the families don't talk about it because they're ashamed or they feel guilty. Shame doesn't matter to us right now, she goes on to say. What really matters is keeping some other person, especially a child, from trying this. We don't want anybody else to feel the same agony and wretchedness that we're left with. So this is huge. This was a huge statement. And like I said, this is not the only family that has made this choice. There was another a young lady, her name was Molly Parks, and she was a 24-year-old heroin addict. And she overdosed in New Hampshire while at work. And this went viral because her family wrote about her addiction in great length. And they were hoping to inspire other drug users to maybe quit, to maybe not be so drug, you know, so into this addiction and maybe get the help that they need, maybe not to be ostracized by their family. And her parents wrote in her obituary, along Molly's journey through life, she made a lot of bad decisions. She fought her addiction to heroin for at least 5 years and had experienced a near fatal overdose before. If you have any loved ones who are fighting addiction, her family asks that you do everything possible to be supportive and to guide them to rehabilitation before it's too late. I consider this to be a courageous and selfless act, just like organ donation. Using your sorrow to help others, even at the darkest moments, if you can save a life and if you can set an example which can keep others from traveling down a path, I think you should do it. Some of us are so paralyzed by fear. So paralyzed by fear of judgment, by fear of shame, by fear of being gossiped about or talked about. And we're afraid to step out there. We're afraid that anybody will know what we're going through when we can do something to help others. We're so worried about other people judging us. And I'll be the first one to say, hey, I lost my glass house in foreclosure. You know, I'm not going to judge anybody on things like that. I think that it's real. I think that it's true. I think that it is honest to put something out there that could potentially help other people. The boy in Baltimore setting an example, the school, the authorities, the community, letting people know, letting the girls know, we're not going to put up with this. You're not alone. You have power. The situation with the heroin overdose, being honest, being truthful, being forthright in what you're going through if you have the opportunity to help others. You never know what other people are going through. And I feel like the best way to learn from mistakes is to be allowed to make them and to be allowed to suffer the consequences. And if it's too late to learn, if it's too late for you to learn because you've already made the mistake or because the parents with their child who died from heroin, it's too late for her to learn, then each one teach one. Find a way to make a statement that can help the next family, that can help the next child. Be an example of the road not to travel. This little boy in Maryland needs to be an example of the road not to travel. His parents need to support this decision. They need to support a bigger system being involved and being able to say, hey, not only to this kid, you were wrong and you need to learn from this, but they need to set an example for everyone else out there, for all the other parents of sons or of children to understand that boundaries are real. People need to stand up and secure their own boundaries and let others know, hey, I'm not going to put up with this. And if you violate my boundary, this is going to happen to you. But at the same time, you've got to be smart and you've got to be open to people being critical. But you've got to be out there because if you don't, you're not part of the solution. You're part of the problem. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Voice of Reason. Here's Deneen Manette.
Welcome back. We are going to switch gears now, and we're going to go into the infidelity segment a little bit sooner today because I have two really interesting questions that I received. I always ask each week for people to send me their infidelity issues and things that they're dealing with. I have been working in the infidelity community for many years, about 15 years. I'm the author of a book, Ultimate Betrayal, Recognizing, Uncovering, and Dealing with Infidelity, as well as I host an infidelity website, ultimatebetrayal.com, where there's a lot of information about dealing with betrayal, the stages of infidelity, rebuilding trust, the signs, all types of things that help the infidelity community. There's nothing that you have to pay for on there or anything like that, but it's just a good place to go. And, you know, it's just a good place to go if you want to, if you're dealing with something, if you're dealing with this pain and you just want to feel as though you want to get some information and connect with other people. There's resources and other things like that. So I'm very, 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 connected and protective of my infidelity survivors community as one myself. And I just really feel like it's important that we discuss these issues and hash through them. So I'm going to get to the very first question. And this one is one that really just struck a chord with me, and you will understand why. This question comes from Ben. And he writes, "My wife and I have been married for 7 years. She had a short affair while away on a girls' trip and got pregnant. She really didn't know the guy. He lives out of the country, in fact. But she was able to connect with him, contact him, and let him know about the baby. And he wants nothing to do with the baby." Shocking, right? "We have spent the past 5 months working to rebuild our marriage, but it has been extremely difficult for me. We decided to stay together and try and rebuild. But each night when I lay beside her in bed, I can feel another man's baby growing in her tummy, and it kills me. We have no children of our own and had had difficulty conceiving, so of course she wanted to keep this baby. We don't believe in abortion, and adoption was off the table. So that is how we find ourselves in this mess today. The baby inside her is beginning to move, but while she's feeling excitement, I am honestly feeling extremely convicted. Sometimes I just feel like packing up my things and leaving because I honestly question whether I could truly love this child. So far, I must admit that I don't, but I do love my wife. So what should I do? Should I stay or go? And do you think I will ever get over this?" Well, Ben, whew, I'm telling you, when I read that, I was floored because I'm going to have to give you the award for Infidelity Survivor of the Year. And you know what? Of the decade. Because there are certain things for me personally that would be a deal breaker, and that is definitely one of them. The fact that it's difficult enough to get over an affair. It's difficult enough to put your relationship back together and to rebuild trust and love and to move forward without having a constant reminder of the affair. It's bad enough that you have to drive by restaurants and go by places and see things that are triggers that constantly remind you of this infidelity, or deal with the pain for the rest of your life when certain things happen, when you see certain pictures and hear certain names. And even though it gets better over time, it's difficult enough without having a product, a consolation prize of that affair in your home and in your bed every night. So because of the fact that you have taken the road and made the decision that you love her enough and want this marriage to work to try and find a way to deal with this, I applaud you, because I don't know many people that could do that. And I don't know, some people may look at that as a weakness. I look at it as a strength. Because what you are deciding to do takes an awful lot of strength and an awful lot of courage, because you are accepting a situation that you're uncertain about, but you're willing to take the challenge at this point, to entertain the challenge. I applaud you. You are, sir, my dear sir, infidelity survivor of the decade. With that being said, this is tough. This is real tough, because as a woman who's had life grow in my belly, it is a very exciting thing. It is a very exciting time. And when we are going through either intense pain or intense joy, we want to share that with the person closest to us. And for her, that person is you. It's a good thing that this person, this other affair partner, is out of the picture. He's out of the country. He's out of her life. It doesn't even sound like they even know each other. So that is one factor that will keep from complicating this situation. And that is actually a blessing that you don't have that person hanging around, fighting for rights, fighting for visitation, and another constant reminder of this affair. That is truly a blessing. And in this country, paternity is assumed by marriage. So if you are married to her, legally paternity is assumed. That is assumed legally to be your child. And whether or not he was out of the country or not, because you two are married, the courts would side with you until that other person could prove that they were their legal father. This man does not seem to be interested in doing that. So you don't have anything legally to worry about if you decide to take this child on as yours, because the courts will assume paternity is yours and you will get all of the rights and benefits of being the parent of this child. Great. So that part is taken care of. The fact that the other man is history, that's taken care of. Those are two positive things that we can put to the side now and not focus on. What we do need to focus on is this emotional roller coaster that you are going to have. And I need to let you know that what you're feeling now may not continue after this child is born, because it's not real to you. It's in her stomach and it's hers. And this is not only true in situations with an affair. This is true with a lot of pregnancies. This is true. I have heard this expressed with a lot of men who are the father of the child their wife is carrying, that they're excited and all that because she's pregnant, but they don't really feel that bond or connection until that child is born, because then it becomes real to them. She feels the flutters. She feels the movement. These are all the hormonal changes and emotions and things that she's going through, but that's not necessarily something that impacts you, because you are removed from it to a certain degree. So that's not something that's necessarily unique to you as someone who's not the biological father of this child. So that I don't want you to concern yourself so much right now with the fact that you aren't feeling connected to this child, because a lot of times that is the case up until the baby is born and the father is now holding the child, feeling, smelling, caring for the child. Oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes that is the case. But I am concerned if you honestly cannot see yourself bonding with this child, because this child is an innocent victim of your wife's selfishness. It is an innocent victim of your wife's inability to make a good rational decision, inability to show you respect, disrespect for your marriage, disrespect for you, and complete just oblivious and inconsiderate, rude, selfish decision that she made while she was with her girls. So this is a situation where I really need you to probably get into some type of counseling and to sit with a therapist and work through this emotion of whether or not you think you could actually accept this child. Because if you can't, if you are going to be in a situation where you are living in this child's life and this child only knows you as daddy, and you don't honestly think you can embrace or love this child, I'm going to think that you might want to consider getting out of this relationship. And that is not something that I typically advocate, and that is not something that I typically suggest. But in this situation, we are dealing with an innocent child that was not part of its conception, and it is not fair for it to have a parent in its life that has disdain and ill feelings and ill will and contempt for it, because it's not going to understand that. It's just going to say, daddy, pick me up. Daddy, play ball with me. Daddy, can you take me to the park? Daddy, hold me, care for me, caress me, rock me, and help me go to sleep. Protect me, daddy. That's all this child is going to know. And if you don't feel that you're going to be able to fulfill that role, I think it's better for you to walk away. I think it's better for you to walk away. Honestly, personally, having not been in your situation, but knowing that things change, and because you love her so much, and because you are working on forgiveness, and if you feel that she is deeply remorseful and sorry, I think she will be sensitive to this. I think she needs to be sensitive to what you're going through. But if you are that committed to being in this marriage, and if you love her that much, I honestly think that you may be able to pull this off, sir. Because people accept other children all the time. And there are plenty of women who are dealing with the fact that their husband had an affair and got another woman pregnant and have that child over every other Sunday. There are plenty of women who deal with that. So it has been done. It has been done. The only difference is that you are laying in bed with a woman who is carrying the child that is the baggage of an affair. That's the only difference. But it happens. There are women who accept the child, the love child of their husbands all the time. So I think you can get through this. I think that you love her enough. It sounds like your marriage is kind of solid and that you all are putting in the work and that you're doing what it takes on the front end to make this work. I think that it may work for you. But if you, after therapy and after deep reflection and introspection, don't think that you can do this and that this child will suffer, the innocent victim of her selfishness will suffer, I'm going to need you to walk away. And I'm going to need her to go ahead and do whatever is necessary to raise her child in an environment that it will be loved and appreciated and accepted. But I think if you're up for the challenge this far, sir, I think, Ben, you will be up for the challenge to give this child the love that it deserves as the innocent victim. And I think that it's probably likely that the community around you does not even know that this is not your child, because this doesn't sound like something that would be shared. And if people don't know, they don't need to know. No one, if those around you in your circle and in your family and in your group and your social interactions are not aware of this, please don't make them aware. Please don't stigmatize this child. Raise this child as your own, because it will be your own. I need you to understand that father is not a noun. It is a verb. It is an action word. It is not the deliverer of the sperm. It is the one who gives the love and the support and the caring and the attention every single day. Father is a verb, and I think you can do it. We'll be right back.
And now back to Deneen Manette for more of the Voice of Reason on TalkZone.com.
Welcome back. It's Deneen Manette, and we are still continuing with our infidelity segment of the show. I wanted to spend a little time, more time on this today, because I had two questions which I thought were very, very critical. And I'm going to go into the second question now, because I think it's very important, and it's something that speaks to what this entire infidelity thing is all about. And this question comes from Lee. And Lee says, she's a woman. She says, I ran into a man I dated briefly in college. He's married now with two children, but we still feel a very strong connection to each other. We had dinner a few times, and I feel myself falling for him again. He says his marriage is not good and all that, and that his wife is cold and unloving towards him. It seems to me that she doesn't appreciate him for the good husband and good father he is, and I feel so sorry for him. He says he and his wife are more like roommates, and that he wants him and I to be special friends, quote, end quote. What should I do? Because if he doesn't date me, he's going to date someone else. So I am obviously not the cause of his cheating. This was something he's going to do regardless. I really like him a lot. Help. What should I do? Oh, Lee. My dear sweet child, Lee. This is the oldest trick in the book. You know what? This was before the book. This trick was carved into the stone plate up there with Moses when he was carving his Ten Commandments. This is before books. This trick is before books. I guarantee you this was carved in stone well before we had books. Okay, where do I start? Number one, Lee, he's married. Lee, I don't care what he is telling you about his wife. She's a cold fish. She doesn't love him. She doesn't appreciate him. She doesn't treat him right. Blah, 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 blah. It is the same old song and dance. That is, if you look in the dictionary under how to get in a girl's pants, this is what you're going to find, Lee. This is what's going to be written there. It's going to say, number one, tell her you're misunderstood by your current partner. Number two, tell her you're not appreciated at home. Number three, tell her you and your wife are only roommates. Number four, tell her you're about to get a divorce. That is what you're going to find under, if you look in the dictionary, under how to get in another woman's pants. I'm telling you, it's there. I swear it's there. Look it up right now. This is just so tired. It is so tired. I don't know if they're roommates. I don't know if she just doesn't appreciate him. It doesn't matter. That is not any of your business, Lee. What is happening in their home, in their relationship, in their marriage, in their bedroom is none of your business. You know why it's none of your business, Lee? Because this man is not available. He's not available. And so many times in life, we spend precious time smashing our heads against walls and trying to run through concrete to go after something that is unavailable. It's not, whether it's because this person is married, whether it's because they're unemployed and a loser, whether it's because they're strung out on drugs and maybe having a moment of clarity and civility, maybe it's because they have temper tantrum or violent anger issues and need to have some help with that. Maybe because they're mentally unstable and not a good relationship fit. Maybe because they're committed or recently out of a relationship and still dealing with the emotional trauma of that. Maybe because they're going through a divorce and fighting tooth and nail over their children. I don't care what the reason is. All of the people, all the aforementioned people are unavailable for a healthy, mature, committed relationship. They are unavailable. You can't get mad at them for that. You only can get mad at yourself because you need to recognize we as individuals, we as men, we as women, we as mature adults need to recognize when someone is simply not available and move on. You can't beat them into being available. You can't cry them into being available. You can't buy them into being available by sending them on trips and sending them gifts and paying for things for them and giving them money to help them over the rough patch. You cannot screw them into being available. Oh, yeah. Let me give it to you three ways from Sunday, baby. A-frame. You can't do that. It doesn't matter how good you give it to them. It's not going to make them available to you. They're unavailable, and there's nothing you can do about it. But move on. And one of the biggest mistakes we make in life is not recognizing that, not being mature enough to see the big picture. If his marriage is so terrible, then it'll end. If his marriage is so disconnected and if his wife is so misunderstanding and horrible to him and abusive to him, this poor guy, she's just so cold and uncaring. If she's such a horrible person, then he needs to have the balls to walk away and to say, you know what, I'm done. But he's staying there for a reason, sweetheart. Let me tell you what that reason is. That reason is likely, number one, because he's still getting it from her. Number two, because it works for him, because she's probably dealing with everything that's necessary to keep the household together with the two kids while he's running around looking for another warm place to put it. I'm sure it works for him. This situation works. Why do you think Ashley Madison was such a popular website? It works for people. I don't want to leave the comfort and security and stability of what I have at home when I can just get some ass on the side. Why would I? Why would I give up what works to go with something new and different? He's not going to leave her. And if it's that miserable and if it's that horrible at home, then he needs to grow a pair and make some hard choices. You don't want a man who can't grow a pair and make some hard decisions. Because if he can't make hard decisions in this area of his life, then he can't make hard decisions in any area of his life. He's got to grow up and recognize that if he made a commitment to someone and it's not working out, then they need to see that through. And you don't want to be with someone, honey, truthfully you don't, that can't see it through. And this whole thing of, if he's not with me, he's going to be with someone else. Like, he's the last damn man on the planet. Are you serious? Like, you got to run in. You better hurry up, sweetheart. You got 4 minutes and counting to get in here, or I'm going to move this good stuff on to the next hooker. Give me a break. You know how stupid that sounds? Do you know how stupid that sounds? I got to get in there and get me some, or someone else is going to get these goods. Oh, yeah, he is such a prize. He is such a prize. Have some self-respect, Lee. Have some self-respect. Don't let anybody put you on a time limit to tell you if you don't get in here and get this and they're going to move on to somebody else. Well, tell him to move the hell on, because he's going to be a problem for whomever he pulls into his web of lies. He is going to be a problem for whomever falls for this stupid bait that you're falling for and goes for this foolishness, this dumb arrangement where you are always the closet one. You are always having to sit by the phone while he's on family vacations with the woman that he is so disconnected with the woman who doesn't understand him, with the woman who treats him so poorly. He's leaving. Oh, help me. You're going to have to sit by and wait on Christmas while they're doing the family thing. You're going to always be relegated to the role of the closet woman as long as you step in there and allow him to continue with this juggling act that he obviously wants you to be part of. Let him know, let me tell you something, dude. Let him know that you are willing to entertain a relationship with him once he has finished the chapter that he is currently writing. Not reading, writing. He is writing this chapter. Let him know that to come around and see you a couple years after his divorce is final, and we'll figure it out. Because if he wants to be with you that bad, he's not just going to take the next warm place that is willing to fill this backseat role that he's obviously advertising for on Craigslist. Let me tell you, there will be somebody else and somebody else and somebody else. If this is a true soulmate connection, and if you two are really meant to be, and if this is really what is supposed to happen because he's your long lost love from college and you finally found each other again, and if that marriage he's in is truly as bad as he says it is, he will end that situation and he will come find you. And I hope like hell that you aren't sitting there pining away waiting for that to happen, because there are people who die waiting for somebody to leave their wife and come and be with them. I need you to be smarter. I need you to stop being a dumbass, and I need you to put your big girl panties on and find yourself somebody who's available, or better yet, just stay alone until you grow up and get a little bit more self-security and responsibility and maturity, because this is not the one for you. This guy is a loser and a dirtbag, and until he's ready to end his current situation, I think you need to keep it moving, sweetheart. So those are my words of wisdom. The Voice of Reason is going to be taking a little hiatus. We will be back at a later date, but I won't be back next Tuesday. We're going to be on a little hiatus. So I just wanted to leave you with some real strong words of wisdom for my infidelity survivors and for those who are considering infidelity. I want you to know that I have enjoyed being with you on Tuesdays and being able to vent and get a lot of things off of my chest, things that I think that people aren't really thinking about. I think that common sense has become uncommon and has now become exceptional sense. And that if we just practice doing what we want others to do for us and empowering ourselves and not making excuses and owning our behavior and owning our future and raising our children in the verb sense as opposed to the noun sense, we can only go forward. Things will only get better. And this country can finally be a place that we can all be proud of to live in, to love, to be, to work, and to be productive citizens. Do not be part of the problem. I implore you all, please be part of the solution. Thank you so much for spending this time with me, and I will talk to you again soon.